Support for the New Hampshire News Recap comes from you, our listeners, and from New Hampshire Community Loan Fund, helping neighbors invest in neighbors to realize their dreams of affordable homeownership and small business growth. More details at communityloanfund.org/radio.
It's Morning Edition from NHPR. I'm Rick Gamley, and this is the New Hampshire News Recap. New Hampshire's corrections commissioner says his department is struggling to find enough people to staff the state's prisons. Currently, half of the positions in the corrections department are vacant. I'm joined now by Stephen Porter, who's been following this story. Stephen's with the Boston Globe. Morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
So, Stephen, what's led to this shortage of corrections officers? I mean, we've been here before, right?
That's right. This has been a long-running issue in New Hampshire and really across the country, trying to maintain adequate staffing levels in correctional facilities. The situation got so bad in New Hampshire back in 2023 that the National Guard was deployed for a few months in order to back up the staffing levels. So this has been a recurring issue, and it's really come down to trying to maintain the recruitment and retention that is needed in order to find enough people to fill these jobs.
Okay, so 50% vacancy rate here. I mean, with all of these positions open, how is the corrections department making sure that there's staff at the prisons?
One word, overtime. There are a lot of the workers who are required to come in and work more than 40 hours in a week. And that obviously turns into more than 80 hours in 2 weeks. And once they cross that threshold, the contract calls for them to get paid double time rather than 1.5 times at this point.
How is the department working to recruit more officers and end this shortage?
So there's a $10,000 sign-on bonus, which is one factor that's contributing to the recruitment efforts. There's also a tactic that the relatively new commissioner of the Department of Corrections is rolling out in order to streamline the hiring process. It's a blitz strategy where applicants can do a lot of the hiring process all in one day. There are some steps that they can't do in that first day, but the blitz strategy helps to kind of streamline that process. And then one topic that some lawmakers are especially excited about is an effort to streamline what the Police Standards and Training Council handles when it comes to ensuring that applicants are able to perform the work specifically for the State Department of Corrections. So there are corrections officers who work for the county level or who work for other states who can theoretically have an easier path to come and fill shifts for the State Department of Corrections. So they're exploring some opportunities with the Police Standards and Training Council to order to streamline that process and get some part-timers in there.
I know this week the Executive Council did approve the commissioner's request for an additional $12 million to cover a budget shortfall in the department at the moment. Is that enough for right now?
It is not. So by the end of this fiscal year, which runs through June, the department is anticipating something like $27 million in overtime overages. And so this $12 million covers a large piece of that. And another piece will be covered by transferring from other line items in the budget. But they're expecting to come back to the Executive Council again in June and seek roughly $8.5 million more in order to cover this dollar amount that's needed. And I will add that the state budget comes into play here because the same number of overtime hours now costs 35% more than it used to, according to the DOC commissioner. And in addition to those higher costs, the state legislature also reduced the Department of Corrections budget, eliminated something like 54 positions. And so the money that had been allocated for those positions is no longer available to transfer to cover the overtime costs that had been covered in prior years.
Some other stories that I know that you've been covering, Stephen. A bipartisan group of New Hampshire state lawmakers recommended Wednesday that Representative Travis Corcoran be censured for his inflammatory social media activity. What part of Corcoran's behavior is at the center of this?
The center of this potential disciplinary action really comes down to two social media posts. Representative Corcoran wrote about two of his colleagues on social media. In one post, he mentioned a naturalized U.S. citizen and called on a White House official to deport her. And in another post, he used a reference to the Holocaust in order to mock a Jewish colleague's karaoke invitation. Specifically, he mentioned that there is a, quote, final solution needed for theater kids in politics. So those are the two posts that were at the forefront of the potential disciplinary action that has now been recommended to the full House.
What have lawmakers been saying about this?
So Democrats have really taken the lead on expressing outrage at these two social media posts. They've raised concerns about rising anti-Semitism and specifically called out the eroding decorum that this represents to some extent. But Democrats are not alone. There are also Republicans who have spoken out about this. Representative Jeanine Nodder, for example, spoke during Wednesday's committee hearing, and she sounded emotional as she talked about how her father had helped to liberate the Dachau concentration camp during World War II. And so I think that there is clearly a bipartisan element here. The committee voted 10-2, and it was a Republican majority committee.
What about Corcoran? What's he had to say about this?
So he has remained defiant and unapologetic throughout this entire process. He took to social media again after the committee had its meeting this week, and he made clear that he intends to use this potential discipline as a badge of honor. So I don't see anything at this point that suggests he intends to apologize.
But what does censure really mean?
So that was a major piece of the conversation that the committee had this week, and they called in the House clerk, Paul Smith, in order to explain the differences. It sounds like a reprimand and a censure is very similar. The key difference seems to be that in a censure, rather than kind of accepting the disciplinary action and moving on and recording it in the public record, that would happen. And also, the speaker would bring the disciplined member to the front of the House and formally advise him of the rebuke that the chamber had entered against them. So the House clerk described it as sort of a calling on the carpet, if you will.
Before you go, Stephen, I did want to touch on one more story that you were covering this week. A New Hampshire man was arrested for allegedly threatening President Trump. Who is he, and what's he accused of doing?
Dean Delachey was working as a federal contractor earlier this year, and he is accused of sending an email in April to the White House expressing an intent to kill the president. He signed the email allegedly with his name and said in no uncertain terms that that was what he intended to do. And so that is what led to his arrest.
You can tell us more about his background and how law enforcement learned about this?
So the incident in April was not the first time that the U.S. Secret Service got involved. Back in January, there was an investigation launched after some troubling searches were discovered on Dean Delachey's FAA-issued work laptop. He was working for the FAA at the time. And these messages talked about trying to find information about the vice president and the secretary of defense, and also expressing an apparent desire to assassinate the president. And so the U.S. Secret Service and local police in Nashua were involved in investigating that incident. There was an interview done back in February, but that was something like 11 weeks before this email was sent allegedly in April to the White House.
Stephen Porter is a reporter with the Boston Globe. Stephen, thanks so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
You can find more of his reporting, by the way, at bostonglobe.com/NH. It's Morning Edition here on NHPR. We're recapping the week's news. If you've got questions, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us, voices@nhpr.org. Governor Kelly Ayotte says she's committed to making sure young people at the state's youth detention facility are properly treated. That comes as the state attorney general continues to investigate claims of physical abuse at the Sununu Youth Services Center. Emory Timmons has been following the story and joins us in the studio now. Good morning, Emory.
Good morning, Rick.
Tell us more about what Ayotte says she'll be doing regarding the AG's investigation.
She's really not said much publicly other than she's waiting for the results of that investigation. And if recommendations come out that say we need different staffing, different practices, different facility, she said she'll make that happen. We did ask her this week, again, what are her feelings about how this is going so far? And we have some tape on that.
Three things need to happen here. It's really important. Number one, children protected. Two, staff safe. And three, the public safe. Those are the three things that have to happen.
We've been covering this story a lot on the recap, Anne-Marie, but remind us again what the allegations the AG is investigating.
There's a number of them. Broadly, it's abuse and neglect. In terms of the abuse, we're hearing about illegal restraints, you know, having a child down, holding them for an extended period of time. There was a child who suffered a broken bone in an illegal restraint and was not did not receive proper medical care for 48 hours. We know that children have been locked down for 4 to 6 weeks at a stretch, not being able to get outside. So those are some of the biggest concerns we're hearing right now. But they're not done investigating, and I think we'll hear some more.
Yeah, there were new reports over the weekend, too, of violence at the facility. What happened there?
Yes, three staff members were injured Sunday night during what the state described as, quote, assault of behavior by juveniles. We don't have any more details. I did check it. No one was transported to a hospital, according to the fire department. So we don't have any details about what those injuries were or the nature of the assault of behavior. But it's important to know that this is not an isolated incident. Staff are also getting injured in this situation during this turmoil. Last month, a state official said she had 10 employees who were out with injuries.
And state lawmakers conducting their own investigation into what's been happening. And I know they're supposed to be wrapping up that investigation next week. What more information are they trying to nail down?
They're really trying to figure out what happened in this lockdown, what happened in this restraint. But they also want to know what life is like in there for these children who are between 13 and 17 years old. You know, what does school look like? Are they getting outside? Are staff trained in trauma-informed practices? Right now, the staff are being trained in military-style tactics. Is that appropriate? I think there's a lot more questions. They meet again Monday. That should be their last meeting. And they want to hear from the head of the facility, Joshua Nye, as well as the head of DHHS, and probably more from the Disability Rights Center.
We'll be watching for more of your reporting from that, Anne-Marie. Thank you. Another story you've been covering, I know out-of-state college students can still vote in New Hampshire, but they cannot use their student IDs anymore to prove their identity. Now, the Secretary of State just issued new guidance for students after a new state law eliminated the use of those school IDs at the polls. So, Anne-Marie, what's the Secretary of State saying college students should be doing going forward?
Well, I thought this was going to be a simple story, and we have gotten a lot of feedback on it because it's confusing. So first, students should make sure they're registered to vote where they want to vote, and they can vote where they're going to school. So the Secretary of State has a really great guide to this process. I would just search student register to vote New Hampshire. And for that, they'll need to prove their ID. So that can be a driver's license from any state, a passport or a military ID. And they'll also need to prove that they're a citizen, which requires a passport or birth certificate or naturalization certificate. And they have to show that they live where they're voting. And so that could be their license, but if it doesn't have their local address, they could use a rental agreement or their dorm assignment. Colleges are providing accurate, you know, documentation that, yes, this student does live in this dorm in this town. And then to vote, students just need to come with their ID. And again, it can't be their student ID, but it could be their license, a passport, or military ID.
And I know that since you've been writing about this story, you told me off air that you've got a lot of responses and some confusion related to this. So what are students saying?
Yes, people are very passionate about this. So I've mostly heard from parents of students and then election officials, and everyone has a little bit of a different understanding of what counts specifically about how you prove your domicile. And the other thing I've been hearing is, wait a second, didn't the legislature say students can't vote where they go to school? And that's not true. They just can't use their student ID. So a lot of people wanted clarification just on the process. And there was a few condescending emails we won't talk about.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Anne-Marie Timmons, NHPR's youth and education reporter. You can find her work at nhpr.org. Thanks so much for being here, Anne-Marie.
Thank you.
If you missed part of today's segment, or if you want to catch up on previous week's New Hampshire News Recaps, you will find the New Hampshire News Recap wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Rick Ganley. This is NHPR.